Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know what, Si? I think to myself, how does Scott Telford always start these podcasts? Does he have some well-thought-out introduction where he says that who we are and how we formed the UBP, the UBP, the UBP? Or does he just launch straight in like I'm doing now? Yes, that's right. Welcome to the Untitled Banter podcast. My name is Jules Gillen. I'm joined by the wonderful and always charming Si. How are you doing, Si, today?
I'm good. I got whiplash now. We were just having a normal conversation and then suddenly, bam, we're in.
Every single week, it never gets easier. Scott does this to me. He'll just be like, oh, what do you think of like this new tax policy? And I'll start giving like, my diatribe. And then all of a sudden, he'll just be like, boom, UBP. And I'm like, Thankfully, though, we've got these lovely people out there, the wonderful listeners of the UBP, the Untitled Banter podcast, who sometimes do us delicious memes highlighting the fact that we have no introduction. And it is absolutely hilarious. But for those new to the show and those not in the know, what we do is we gather all of the questions that we've asked for over the week, gaming, food related, film, TV or otherwise, and we just answer at least three because we are wafflers, professional wafflers. I'm so excited to be doing this with you today, Si, because not only has last night been a tumultuous affair, which we'll start by just saying E3 is dead. We'll discuss that in a minute. But also, the Resident Evil 4 remake is doing the rounds at the moment, and you are a huge lover of the Resident Evil franchise. In fact, you host a podcast called the First Aid Spray Podcast. Plug, 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 plug. Go check it out. And you have a plethora of knowledge on Las Plagas and otherwise. So, are you feeling it, as it were? Are you feeling it, Mr. Krabs, when it comes to...
I'm really feeling it, as Shulk would say from Xenoblade. Yeah, it's a good time to be a Resident Evil fan, so I'm looking forward to digging into that. The E3 thing, though, what a time for that announcement to come last night.
Do you know what the funny thing is? Is that Scott and I were saying a couple of weeks ago, just like 2023 feels like the emergence point of gaming again. Like everyone's come out from the shadows. You know, the COVID stuff is still lingering, but at least it's a distant view in the mirror now. And yet we now have the biggest, or was the biggest, gaming event of the entire year has now gone. So gaming has suffered quite a massive blow with this, really. It's quite sad.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it sort of depends on when you would have said to me E3 is going to die. Because if you'd gone back however many years, it would have been like, no, never. It'll be rocking around forever, man.
Yep.
But it feels inevitable. It has felt inevitable for a number of weeks now. At the very least.
Yeah, I think it's because loads of the developers and publishers decided to host their own events. And the moment that they went and took them from physical spaces to just online demos and presentations, you cut the costs down massively. I was telling Scott this before. I used to work in marketing and sales, and we'd go to like trade events, and they then were charging, this is like back in 2016, around that time, maybe even earlier than 2014, they were charging £1,500 per square meter of floor space in the, I think it was it was a London event place, Earl's Court. Is that what it was? Yeah. And it was £1,500 or thereabouts per square meter. And we had to take, and the minimum was 3x6. So and that was for a 3-day event, and that was every day. So you had your costs of just being there,
that's
taking
insane.
Up space. It's insane, yeah. And they just did it because they were like, where else are you going to go? They used it as a kind of like cornering tactic to just be like, well, if you don't market here, where are you going to market? And that was E3's policies, because I've heard stories of people saying that it was nearly $100,000 to get a booth for some of the larger or even middling sized ones. And maybe that's a lowball figure. Maybe there's some people who went to E3 who know bigger facts than that. And that is an extortionate amount of money just to be there. So when they were just like, well, we don't have to be here, we can go online for free, effectively. Why wouldn't you take that?
Yeah, it's... I don't know much about the Game Awards. I assume there is like a show floor. I just tune in and watch.
It's very small, yeah.
It's right. So basically, that's kind of like all those cost cuttings and also space to hold those trailers, to have those big announcements where everyone is watching. So yeah, like, of course it makes sense that that's overtaken E3 now. It's a strange thing, but it is what it is. Like, it makes sense.
I wonder as well, like, public perception of it. E3, I believe, kind of got associated more and more and more with the negative side of gaming. I'm not saying that is entirely true, but I know that there was, like, it's where the NFTs were popularized. It's where this was popular. It feels like it was the birthing ground of all of the bad stuff, because it's where industry, because they have it the day before the event opens to the public, it's all for the sort of wheelers and dealers and Dell boys who go around carting their let's make money off these whales doing this practice. And I think that when they started leaking those presentations and when little like notes came out of that, people were like, ooh, this is quite a greasy practice. Whereas the Game Awards, it's the celebratory event. It is literally about awarding games for greatness.
Yeah, that's very true. I guess also, to be fair, E3 has been around long enough now that it's going to have a history that includes bad spots and bad memories and bad juju. So, I don't know. It's a strange one because, as I say, it feels like it, at one point it wouldn't have been possible, but it's just gotten worse and worse over the years. And I think... Do you think E3 is dead? Like, I mean, we know it's cancelled for this year. Do you think this is it?
I mean, I don't see how you come back from this. As terms of like a public perception, you just go, if like everyone around the world is using the hashtag E3 is dead, like how do you come back from that saying, like, unless you go the I lived bitch like meme thing, that is the only way you can get around that. And I just don't think that that's possible for an industry juggernaut like this to turn it around. It's not even a bowing out gracefully thing either. It's just like, there was not sustained interest. That is the party line. How do you come back from that? Mm. Like, yes, there was. Like, no, like, you're done.
Yeah, somebody, I mean, everyone out there, just remember which episode Jules predicted that, when a few years they do turn it back around somehow.
They'll be like that, what's it called, the Arrested Development thing, like, oh, yeah, I said this and there it is. Like,
and there it is. Yeah, I don't know. E3, as I say, it's got such a long history. It's a really strong brand name. So it is possible they could do something with it, transform it into something else, or just make it a smaller thing, make it like your standard convention, EGX, you get to play a few games early, but no big presentations. I feel like they could maybe live off that for a while, but it's in terms of what E3 was, I agree that I don't think it's coming back.
You're right, it maybe could come back in a different form, and worryingly enough... You know who probably will put in a lot of money to buy that? The people who bought Atari. Remember that? It was just like, hey, look, Atari's still got some name brand value. We'll buy it up and churn out this terrible stuff. Like, oh, no. It could just be that. Like, it could be E3 turns into NFT3, where it basically just becomes like the next sort of like big wankers conversation. Like, it's just like...
it's definitely dead, right? After that, they'll give it one last...
Money.
Right, yeah. They'll give it one last gasp, at least. I think it's not like they're going to go, well, it's cancelled, it's done. I think they're going to try something with it, whether or not that pans out. Yeah. Depends on what they come up with, I guess.
If they went fully online, if they said, like, look, we're just for a year, we're just going to go fully online, and it's going to be, there's no floor space to market on, and the costs get cut to draw sponsors and people back in, maybe that's the way to do it. Maybe it's rather than fight the inevitability of a non-tangential future, they actually embrace it and just say, look, we'll give it a go.
Maybe, but then what's the difference between your State of Play and your Nintendo Direct going off somewhere else rather than on the E3 online channels? Like, what do those companies have to gain for doing that? Like,
well, you'll just hope that they don't ask those questions. Sorry, that's exactly what I would do if I was in their situation. You just go, and moving swiftly on.
Just flutter your eyelids at them and hope it goes well, yeah.
And speaking of fluttering, we have done enough warbling over here for the birds. So let's go over to the questions submitted by the lovely people who watch or listen to this show. And we're going to start with the biggest of all ledgers, Pinky, who says, massive welcome to Sai. It is a pleasure to have you on the pod. I am even older than Jules. Didn't think that was possible. And have never played a Resident Evil game. Zombie games make me crap my pants faster than a questionable fart after too many protein shakes. If I were to woman up, where would I start? So that is the question.
Amazing. The thing is,
like, where to begin with Resident Evil? I mean, you could say at the beginning, obviously, but maybe there is a better way to introduce people, because the mechanics of the first Resident Evil game, they don't necessarily translate all that well to the modern gaming audience. What do you think?
Yeah, they are, and I don't think it's... I'm kind of a defender of the tank controls and fixed camera. Surprise, surprise. But I think it is one of those things where it's a genre that's just not popular and it's not around, so people aren't used to it. So you jump in, so it is... Ah, what is this thing?
it's scary for all the wrong reasons in that sense, isn't it? Like, I can't control him.
Yeah, exactly. There are a lot of other things to be afraid of other than the zombies. But Resident Evil's weird, and because it's been around so long, it's had several soft resets, mm-hmm. and a lot of its stories are fairly well self-contained. So there are definitely points to jump in. Like, it really depends on what you're looking for. 4 and 7 are both really good jumping in points.
Oh, the 4 remake is...
like, that we're saying probably this. The answer, isn't it, yeah. I think?
I know. The thing is that we were saying yesterday how much fun we were having with this game. And in terms of accessibility for gunplay, control scheme, the fact that you can craft on the fly, the fact that you have got more defensive options than any other game, it is the most approachable, because it's just the best of the best at this point. Mm. And it's really hard to find fault with what it's aiming to do and how it achieves those goals. I just wonder if maybe it's not the scariest game. So, like, should you jump in with the scariest game? I mean, Pinky says that they're going to obviously crap their pants if they go on the scariest. So maybe Resident Evil 4 remakes dialed back on the horror, more on the action. Maybe is a better place to start.
I think from there you can almost figure out yourself where you want to go, right? That's a good sort of litmus test. It's like, okay, that wasn't too spooky. I'm going to try Resident Evil 2 remake, which is similar, but a lot spookier.
Or oh, if it's you want to very go, scary, that game.
Yeah, it's very scary. So, like, that would be your lead up. Or you could play some of the more action games, like 5 or 6, if you really want. If you...
Oh, God,
you know, it's an option.
Yeah, it is definitely a choice. I think that it's weird, isn't it? Because Resident Evil's got so many styles of gameplay. It's always a franchise that's been known for innovation, that maybe I would recommend to newcomers starting at the newest games and working backwards so that you get to appreciate it more and more that you go on. Although you will be losing features as you do. So you go Resident Evil 4 Remake, Village, definitely, I think is worth playing because it's a big departure from it, but it's still action, comedy action, like body horror, silliness over the top. Then I'd say, I'm ranking it in terms of the least scary games at this moment, I realise. Then maybe go 5, bring in a partner to get you through this scary pseudo bits that are there.
Yeah, that game would probably be still, if you've never played it before, the game's probably still fun if you've got someone to play it with. Maybe solo might be a bit tougher to get through at this point because it is, 14, 15 years old.
Its age in the AI department.
Absolutely. So if you've got friends to play it with, RE5 is definitely good fun still.
Well, I played it a long time ago on stream here at What Culture with Kirsten, and I had the time of my life. I probably never enjoyed that game as much as I did playing in front of other people with somebody else who wasn't super familiar with the franchise. Mm. That really was a super fun ride. After that, do you know what? I'm going to give it... I'm actually one of the defenders of Resident Evil 3's remake. It's nowhere near as good. Nowhere near as good as Resident Evil 2. But in terms of, like, its lesser scary factor, more action stuff, and it's never boring. You can fault it for that. So I'd say... And it's a short runtime as well, Pinky. So maybe that would be a good one as well. So there's a handful of games out there. Oh, yeah. And also, there's ones to avoid, surely. Umbrella Chronicles, get in the bin.
No! Look, there's a difference between Umbrella Chronicles and Umbrella Core. That is the one. That's the one that you kick into space.
That's the one where it's you have to extract all of the vials. Is that correct? Where you play as like the special ops people?
Yeah, it's honestly, it's barely a game.
Yeah, I can't even remember what it's about. It's that like it's out not, of my brain.
It's not really about anything. It's about Capcom trying to make a multiplayer online FPS. Well, was it FPS? Yeah, I think it was. It was like a weird...
It was odd.
It was odd. It's awful. You will play it for 5 minutes, immediately recognise why everyone disowns it. It's terrible.
It is probably the worst game in the entire franchise, and that is saying something there. Yeah. But there we go, Pinky, a few games to help you start there. Now let's go over to... Oh, actually, we had an E3 question from Nate the Gamer. With so many publishers pulling out of E3, is E3 dead, and do you even think we're getting an E3 this year? So there we go. We've actually kind of answered that already. So we'll move swiftly on to the Honest NPC, who says, with the death of live service games, what is the next big thing for publishers to keep gamers locked in? Is it the future of Assassin's Creed-style hub world, where you can access a series, single, and multiplayer? And of course, cosmetic store in one area, and also stay awesome. Thank you very much for that question. It's a tough one. How do you keep gamers hooked in this modern era when their dopamine receptors are absolutely fried by 7 seconds of TikToks? Like, I don't know.
It is. They'll figure something out. I mean, that's what they're, I'd say, good at. I don't know if that's necessarily the right term, but that's definitely what they think about more than, I mean, the nice answer would be to say quality games.
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, that's not the world we live in. You have to have some cynicism with dealing with these people. I don't play a lot of Assassin's Creed, so I can't speak to that specific example. That description, Splatoon does something similar.
Where it does.
That's what it made me think of, or maybe PlayStation Home weirdly came to mind. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll come back, but I don't know. I think the more and I know you guys have talked about this, and this is more like a side tangent, but the more pressing concern is, I think all these people are going to start looking at AI before anything else, and how can we utilize AI?
I didn't even think of like AI. AI in gaming.
Because there's still people out there that, and whatever, it depends on the game maybe and your personal preference, that will chastise games for not having enough content. And AI is the easy fix for all of that, because you can just pump it out. Here's a new weapon skin every 5 seconds.
Wow, that's... Because the thing is, I only remember recently reading about Ubisoft saying that they were going to get NPC dialogue written by AI. And I thought that was a terrible idea, because it's like, hello, fellow human, would you like to human a human? It's like not the thing I'm going for. But in terms of mission generation... Like a side quest generator, you could have infinite replayability. And actually, it could be quite varied, because I've been messing around with ChatGPT myself just to see what it can and can't do in terms of like generating content that I feel interesting. And I've used it mainly for, because I do Live and Let's Dice, I do a lot of like Warhammer and Battle Report stuff over there as well. So I wrote, write me a custom mission for Warhammer using these parameters with the names of these people in it, and write me an intro blurb at it. And I went through it. I did one refresh on it saying, write this in a more relaxed style. And I tell you, I was genuinely impressed with what it came out with, because it was a custom mission that I was looking around. I hadn't seen anyone else like popularized using. I couldn't find it in any of my recent memory banks of mission things. It made a lot of sense. It seemed really fun. And the intro blurb was not only lore friendly, but it was actually very funny, because I'd added in a few like sprinkles, like he's using this thing that's to do that. And I was like, okay, if this was applied to video games, this could be very cool.
Yeah, it's a weird one, because it is exciting but also terrifying, of course, because of the human aspect to it. I know we talked about this a lot the other week when we were hanging out, like AI, and we're still quite early days. It feels like everyone stopped talking about it a little bit. Like it's died down in terms of the art thing, but video games, we haven't even seen what they could potentially do with that. Not just writing side quests to be added in, but probably an AI that can program them in for you, which is...
Yeah, and the worst thing, it would just be a case of, like, you take what it's just written and say, now write this for the game.
Yeah, like, you would teach it to understand the code of the engine and the game, and it would just plonk it in, and there you go. Which is horrific.
But it's also, like, I know that it's horrific, but if you're looking at it from a scientific or experimentation side, it's fascinating, so amazing.
The first game that does that and goes, right, here's our first DLC completely written by an AI. It's going to do gangbusters, because people will want to experience it and see what it's like. Yeah. And at very least, people are going to tune in to watch it if they don't buy it themselves, because it's so intriguing. It's so new and fresh and awful, I should point out repeatedly. But
Yeah. I mean, it's going to cost real people their jobs. Like, there is no way around this, because if you are a scripter, if you are a writer, if you are this, your job will be lessened significantly by something that can automate a billion times quicker than you can. And let's face it, I don't think that a lot of publishers or developers definitely, actually, the publishers care about originality. They will just go like, look, this works. This is what people want. Make more of it. And yeah. I don't care if your side quest is sweep 10 dust piles from the room using the broom of destiny. That will work and do it a million times over. Like, it's not original, but people will do it. And I think that that is how you're going to get people locked in, because the live service model, it died on its ass because people didn't have the foresight to see that COVID wouldn't last forever, no matter what situation the world found itself in. Because live service came out as a whole, like, you have time to spend all your life playing this because you are at home, furloughed otherwise. Now people are going back to work or getting back into real life. There has been a significant dip in people online gaming because they're just not around all the time. Mm-hmm. And so live service people are like, well, why didn't we see this coming? People can't spend their entire lives dedicated to one game. It's like, no, you idiot, because it was never sustainable in the first place.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy now. Obviously, we've got games that have been out like a year that are done. Yeah. And then that's it. And you'll never go back to play them again. So celebrate that hopefully, in theory, this is the end of that kind of situation.
Yeah.
I suppose dread what comes next.
Yeah, the dawn of the AI is approaching. And
one door closes and a worse one opens.
Oh, man. I was just thinking, like, allow just a game that had that as its core mechanic, that didn't even try to hide it, that was just basically, like, it's called, I don't know, Infinity, and you literally just type in the game you want to play and it will make it for you, like within a sort of subset of like imagine as well, going forward, asset flip stuff was already a problem. If you're going to then find or program an AI to do and search out those assets to turn into basic video games, the Steam store page is going to be an ungodly swamp.
Oh yeah.
Like, you will not be able to navigate it. And if you add in that, the factor that there are way too many video games out there for people to ever play in their lifetime, and too much choice crippling the idea of the player being able to actually find a functional game that they want to invest time into, we may be entering into a spiral situation where you can never find the game you want to play. They will get buried. The industry will have the arse fall out from underneath it. And where do we go from there? That's the doomsday prophecy version of AI.
I don't want to think that too far ahead, but it's very easy to visualize that. Like Train Simulator, right, where the Steam page has got endless pages of DLC. That'll be every game. That'll be every page on Steam. Will just be thousands of things, and you don't know what's what. And you just, like, you know what? None of it. I've got my Game Boy Advance. I'll just,
Side tangent, I was talking to somebody about doing a competition, and they had an idea of doing a supermarket sweep style thing where you could just go to the store page and you basically put everything in your basket in under a minute and you got to keep whatever you did.
Amazing.
And I was like, if somebody was smart about that, they could game the hell out of that system by going to the train simulators things, because each one of those trains is like 50 quid. Like, you put like 100 of those in, just add all, and there's like 1,000 of them.
You I was going
like,
to say, like,
thank you for that $5,000.
Right, I don't use Steam a whole lot. I'm a console gamer of a PC gamer, but like, there's surely a everything button at the top of most games. So just locate all of those.
You just get an AI script to write it for you. Add all add all DLC from this game to my basket. Blah, 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 done. But yeah, there we go. Welcome to the terrifying future, honest NPC. And to be honest, your name implies as well that you may indeed be an AI yourself.
So very honest. Very honest.
I know, right? I know, you can trust me.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, so we're going to go now to, we're going to go back to another Resident Evil question, because I did ask for a more Resident Evil tone stuff, knowing that you'd be on the pod, and also the fact that Resident Evil 4 is doing gangbusters. So we're going to go to jwright.pt, who says, UBP, UBP, hope you're both well. Although I'm loving the RE4 remake, I do miss the campiness of the original. If they decide to remake either 1, 5 or 6, which part would you like them to keep unchanged? For me, punching the boulder should be untouched. I am right there with you. In fact, two boulders, let's double it.
Yeah, the boulder thing, it actually really reminds me of the original Resident Evil 4, the cheesiest, campiest opening, not opening line, but like when the title comes up and Leon looks around and he goes, "Where's everyone going? Bingo." Which is utterly stupid. But we at First Aid Spray talked a lot about how, wow, they're changing the tone of this game. I don't think they can change that line though, because it's legendarily stupid and everyone loves it. And of course they didn't. It's the same thing with the boulder. It's such a meme, you can't get rid. If anything, they need to put more cameras on it and make it really intense. they need to really hone in on that. Be like, remember
because
this?
At this point in the boss battle, obviously, Wesker's like giving you... he's spouting absolute nonsense. He's turned into whatever monstrosity he's turned into, and he's just giving it the beans. Now, obviously, Chris has got to get to Sheva, or Sheva's got to get to Chris, depending on which one you're playing as. And you've got to punch... No, actually, no, it is definitely a Chris segment, that, isn't it?
Because it is Chris, anyway,
So you punch the boulder, you knock it in, and you use that to get across the gap,
to the boss
right?
fight, yeah.
It needs to now be dialed up so that he punches the boulder and it slams into Wesker, and that looks like it's the thing that kills him, but it's a fake out, and then he pushes the boulder away like, you thought that would stop me?
Yeah, that's the boulder in half.
Because then you've got the meme gif of that, of him ripping the boulder in half, and that's another one, because you just go, you've dialed it up from Chris punching the boulder with his monstrous meat arms, and then you've got a new one of Wesker said, nah, I'm not having any of that.
I think that is probably the moment that has to stay out of all of those three games. That is the best one. So, good pick.
I mean, we've also got the other options that Jay Wright said was 1, 5, or 6. So we've covered 5. What moment from 1? If they were to remake a remake, what would you want to get? Because, I mean, the Jill sandwich one obviously got to stay. But if we're talking like a moment that was iconic within Resident Evil 1, what would you reckon you'd want to stay?
That's really hard, because nothing stands out quite to the degree, not that there isn't iconic moments, but nothing is the boulder punch moment. The thing for me, for them to retain, is the thing that they added to the remake over the original, which is the Lisa Trevor stuff. Like, they need
that was great. I love that.
I mean, that makes such a difference where, like, if you go back and play the original PlayStation version, you know, other than the fact that it's obviously very aged by this point, that bit feels like, where's this? It should have been here all along. It feels like it should have been part of the game. So it's important for me that they get that right, specifically. Mm-hmm.
I think that, if anything, I would like it to be expanded upon. Like, maybe even with some flashback segments that show Lisa's family being tortured, coerced in order to do what she has to do, or even just more of a segment of showing the experimentations that went on. Mm. Like, even just, like, if it was as simple as finding rooms within the mansion or the underground facility that were the research test centers for her, so you would get to see even more of the pain that she went through, because as a character she is such a great driving force for why you should hate Umbrella.
Yes, a kidnapped child that has just had a cocktail of experiments put into them, separated from their mother as well, no less, who gets the same treatment, that it doesn't go well, and they just kind of dump the mother's body. That's the thing they could probably add in, some more diaries from the mother or some kind of evidence of what happened to her, to really, yeah, just wrap that family story up in a nice, horrible bow.
I also really like the fact that you never defeat her. Like, she just goes, I've had enough. Like, I'm just jumping off into the darkness. Yeah. Peace out. And I love that because it's like, okay, that is a horrifying image that we couldn't actually beat her. And it was effectively like, we just bought ourselves some time and luckily things just happened to work out for the best. If they expanded on that in the remake of the remake, when you go down into the sewer sections later on, being hunted down by her again could be very interesting indeed. Another segment, just add more Lisa Trevor in. Make it the Trevor Chronicles. I'd be up for that. I'd also love it if Itchy Tasty stayed. That's got to stay.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, good point.
I feel like if you take that out, you are missing out on a ton of banterous moments from Resident Evil 1. Now, Resident Evil 6, that's a tough one for me because I'm going to say that I want to cut stuff. I definitely want stuff to go from that rather than stay. A lot of it, in fact. What would you want to keep from Resident Evil 6, that great game?
I don't despise it quite as much as everyone. Like, it's bad. Of course it's bad. There are some things in there that I can appreciate what they were trying to do, but then they just go totally off the rails with some of the story elements. Like, there's some really cool aspects that they just throw away. So there's so much I can think immediately that I'd like to change. You need more of this, less of this.
Yeah.
Stuff to stay is really... The slide mechanic. Oh,
that actually is amazing. That's what I need to say. Yeah, okay.
The ability for Leon to slide on his ass and shoot zombies with two dual-wielding pistols, like, you know.
I love it when he, like, rolls on his back and you can just, like, fire roll out the way. It's like, bang-ba-bang, wee, bang-ba-bang, wee-wee-wee.
Yeah, like, it's really cool. Yeah, cool. Just, like, lying on the ground. Yeah, yeah, that's great.
In fact, that hasn't made an appearance since. I'm surprised that didn't come back for the RE4 remake. But I guess that they're trying to make it so that mobility on your feet is the main aspect of this. We don't want to spend half the game with... Actually, no. Thinking about it, they're all mostly close combat as well. So you'd be so easy to avoid a lot of their attacks just by falling on your ass all the time.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, the difference with RE6 is a lot of enemies with guns and stuff, isn't there? So makes sense.
I tell you what I would keep as well. As much as I hate Jack...
Jake.
I keep getting it wrong, and I'm doing it pseudo on purpose, but not really, because I keep forgetting because he's that unmemorable as a character. Jake, sorry. I would keep that apple eating scene. You know, the one where he, like, he eats the apple, he beats all the people, and then he, like, grabs the apple again and takes a bite out of it.
Yeah,
I'd keep that scene because if that set a tone that just wasn't for me, but at the same time was so over the top and ridiculous that I was like, I've got to give it credit because we are now entering... You are literally Dante from Devil May Cry. Like, there is no way that this isn't something that Dante has done in the past. But yeah, there we go. Those are the things that we would keep untouched about Resident Evil 1, 5, and 6. Thank you, Jay Wright. You absolute ledge. Let's go over here to Lobotomizer, who suggests...
Brutal.
I know, right? Who says, top three candidates to make a AAA John Wick video game. As in, I'm assuming the publishers, right? Or the developers. That would handle that. Or, yeah, it's got to be the developers. I mean, Devolver, 100% would be
great
up their
shout.
Street.
Yeah.
They're just incredibly over the top and insane with some of the stuff they put out. And I feel like they would do... It wouldn't just be like an action game. It would be a super stylized action game that had like an amazing aesthetic that was very different from what we're seeing on the screens.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say someone like... I know their plate's very full, but Insomniac, because it's something different for their portfolio. And they kind of tend to make everything sing at this point. So, also... They would have a handle on that stylish aspect, I feel like. And the other one that comes to mind, and this is maybe a shout out, I think this is close to Scott's heart, is Rockstar, back when they made games instead of GTA Online cosmetic packs and whatever they do now.
Where's my table tennis too? My ping pong game, bring that back.
So I could see them, Rockstar of old, obviously, that definitely appeals to the hyper violent stuff that they used to do.
That would actually be really good because they've already got an amazing graphic engine. They've pushed the most out of what their team can do in the art department. So transcribing that over to chaotic fight scenes would be amazing. Who did the development of Sleeping Dogs? Because I feel like that's so close to what John Wick could be that I feel like that would be a great one. I know that Square Enix published it, but I don't know who developed it. You vamp while I quickly look this up.
Yes. Yeah, though that's a good shout, actually. And similarly, along that vein, I think it was 2K Czech that did the Mafia games.
Oh, yes.
Like, or at least Mafia 2, that would also probably appeal to them. So you've got to think of developers that have handled that sort of thing in the past, I think.
It's listed as on the Wikipedia page as Feral Interactive, United Front Games, and Square Enix Europe. So I would go for any of those because I tell you what, in terms of fighting, in terms of being able to use a parkour system and lots of like abilities to evade as well as attack, I love that. Oh, I've just completely forgotten one. The people who made Sifu. That's the answer.
Oh, yeah. Because
Sifu is just one step away from being John Wick. Mm. And that art style would look so good in a John Wick thing as well there. Yeah. Oh, there you go. God. I love Sifu. Have you played it through?
I've not. It's on the backlog.
Please for me, player. It is. It was my game of the year every year. I honestly loved it that much. It is, without ruining what the tone of the things are there, just the combat mechanics alone in that, it's like the distillation of every single Arkham game, but without the sort of meaty, like, slowness of it. You feel like you are actually flowing from move to move, and the ability to call on little tricks by holding down a button and then it brings up like a little wheel of special attacks. You can like eye poke people, you can like kick them onto the floor, you can trip them up, you can like bash them in the head with a little wooden stick. It is phenomenal fun. Like, if you took it for nothing else other than just a great evening in to play through, because it is fairly short, it is well worth your time.
I'm so glad that always appeals to me. It is fairly short.
Like, yeah, I know. I know, in this day and age. It's not a live service title, let's put it that way. I'll tell you what, we're going to go straight back in here to Justin. This is straight back into the Resident Evil territory. From Justin, who says, lovely day, legends of the UBP. I haven't got my hands on the Resident Evil 4 remake, but given that Mercenaries mode isn't being added till next month and Ada's side campaign isn't currently in it, do you think that they will add it later, or do you think there'll be other story DLC? Now, the reason I bring this up is because we know the Mercenaries mode is being added, and I believe it's as soon as next week somebody was doing the rumour party.
April 7th, so yeah, yep. Just about a week.
Cool, and I cannot wait for that. That should be amazing fun. The DLC, let's face it, Separate Ways. Is it Separate Paths? I can't remember.
Separate Ways. Called. Leon literally says, this is not really a spoiler, Leon literally says the words, going our separate ways right at the
I
end.
Know. He might as well look into the camera and just be like, get it, everyone?
We guess this was the Resident Evil 4 all along. Yeah.
Plus, there's elements within the story that you and I were discussing at length last week where there's a few inconsistencies with it, where the second Verdugo, for example, doesn't make an appearance in the boss battle, so where is that? It could show up in a DLC boss. You'd said that there was a cut boss battle, UR036?
U3, it's called.
Something like that, UB46, or whatever it is, yes. the band, the
island explodes.
Island explodes because it's for no reason. It just is like, oh, we're all dead now, explode. It's like, I understand Sadler's cronies all dying because the main parasite host is gone, but at the same time, why does that make things explode?
The island had a giant parasite in it. No, it's absolutely like, I think Separate Ways existed originally to cover a bunch of holes and make more connections to the wider series, so I expect same thing again. I'm pretty certain that's happening.
Yeah.
And more to the point, with the remakes for 2 and 3, their DLC didn't... Well, 3 didn't have any DLC whatsoever. 2's was a bunch of what-if scenarios. So they've been very reticent to add big chunks of new story. So just doing Separate Ways again is kind of a get-out for that. So I fully expect that with Mercenaries, Separate Ways, and then the VR2 update, whatever that's going to be.
Oh, yes, of course.
That's a thing that's happening, they've announced. So that's probably your lot for RE4R. I don't expect any new story DLC.
I would love it, however, if they expanded on the Mercenaries packs, as in, like, I know that they released for the 3DS the Mercenaries 3D, which was basically a collection of all of the maps from across the series, all of the characters, plus some new ones, like Barry Burton was in 5 Gold, wasn't he? There's a few new elements and twists on it, and I absolutely loved having all of that collected into one package. I wonder if we'll see, what was the... This shows how out of touch I am with the Call of Duty franchise. What was it called, that mode that became its own thing? Warzone?
Warzone.
Like, Warzone was a feature, then became its own game. I hope that the success of Mercenaries will show Capcom that people want to play time attack, score-based, like, leaderboard-focused things. I would love that to become its own standalone thing that that exists outside of all of the remakes and new franchise stuff that they put into it. That would be very cool.
We are awfully close to me going on a rant about RE-verse. Do you remember that thing that was Penguin Village?
No,
that will be a circle of a drain, because that should have been a celebration of Resident Evil's history and all the maps from different games and stuff, but it absolutely wasn't. Anyway, that is like a other podcast for another day.
I feel like that's the most condensed rage that you could possibly have put there, because it's disappointing. It's
still bubbling.
Isn't it?
It's still bubbling away. But you could absolutely keep updating RE4 Mercenaries with some new maps and characters if they wanted to, if there was a reason to do it, if people were still playing it. So, yes, it should be expanded, and there's potential for them to keep doing it. So that would be cool. Yeah, chuck some stuff in there from... It's very easy to put stuff in there from Village. It'd be nice to do some other stuff as well. But you can absolutely put some Village and RE2 maps or whatever in there.
Because that does because obviously they've done a lot of DLC outfits as well at the moment. I wonder if they'll add a few more in other Resident Evil games.
Yes, I think so. Our colleague Durkin was quite upset that Leon's RPD outfit is not in the Resident Evil 4 remake whatsoever. Yeah. So I wonder if that's coming as part of Mercenaries, maybe, hopefully.
Ooh, that would be good. That would be good, especially if they added in the ability to play as some of the other suggested characters that were in there as well. I mean, I would love it if Chris just makes an appearance.
That'd
just
be cool.
As a special thing. It would be nice. It would be very nice indeed.
Why not? Make the merchant playable. That's what I want.
Oh, that would be so good. Imagine, because he would be like, he'd be slow.
Yep.
He would be like, only take one hit to kill, but he'd have all the guns and
he'd
all
have
the
at
weaponry.
Least one rocket launcher.
Yeah. Oh, and he would just like, maybe you could do this thing where you get health back by looting the bodies of people that you've killed.
Oh, that's fun.
So he's just like, what are you buying? And then he just goes, bloop, 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 bloop. That would be amazing. I'd love that. Let's go for what will potentially be our final question over here. And it's going to come from John Paco, who says, hello, you perfect species. What are your most wished changes and improvements in video games for the future? Mine is better liquid in video games. When characters pour liquid from bottles or empties in their glasses, it ruins the scene for me. It looks like the same from the early 2000s. Liquid physics, bring it back. I'm totally on board with that.
Yeah, that's one for me, definitely. That's a great shout. I also always notice that with film and TV, when someone's like got a coffee cup, you can tell that it's always empty.
Yeah.
Just drives me wild.
Especially when they're getting like really, they motion a lot in the scene, and you're like, that would spill. That would spill.
No,
you're worrying me. Put it down.
I mean, that's such a good one. I'm not sure there is any better answer. Like, hair is still certainly something that needs to be worked on. It's gotten better, but I still feel like there are some developers that can do it better than others. Do you remember there was a long period of time, I feel like, where wrestling games and hair was just a nightmare?
Oh,
I feel like there was definitely wrestling games where they just, in the creator wrestler, you just couldn't have long hair because they were like, nah, it's not worth it.
And do you remember when it was Bianca Belair came on the scene for her first game? You could imagine the 2K developers sweating bullets because they were
right,
like, it's all about hair. That's one of her things that she does. We have to make this look good.
Yeah, exactly.
If anything's going to force you to develop better hair physics, it's basically realizing the outcry that would happen if you did it wrong. Mm. I mean, I was actually playing through Resident Evil 7 recently, and what's the name of it? Mia's
hair is terrible.
It's awful. I mean, to be fair, I shouldn't be criticizing, seeing as I have none of my own. And admittedly, she has been locked up in
the cabin.
I can
say it. I'm here. It's fine.
Yeah, there
everybody
you go.
Knows.
Like your hair is legitimately beautiful. Her hair is just needs a wash. It really does. Like, I'm just like getting the suds out. I'm just like, come here, love. Let's go. Let's sort this out for you. But yeah, hair physics definitely need to be sorted out. Liquid ones, as been said. I would say having visual damage, I feel like that was introduced with the Batman series, where across the night you get more and more beaten up and your armor would get more scrapes, cuts, broken bits. I loved that visual degradation to show that you were actively progressing through time. And I feel like a lot of games just don't do that. I mean, all of the action games that I can think of, it's like I wear a bulletproof vest, I get shot a billion times, and it's still completely in perfect condition come the end of the storyline. It'd be nice to see a bit more dirt and grime on it, wouldn't it?
You get a couple of red marks that fade away after a few seconds. Like, oh, yeah. There you go. My wounds are healed. Like, yeah, I don't know about that.
to go back to Resident Evil, seeing as it is definitely the theme of this podcast, it is quite funny, isn't it, when Leon gets into so many scrapes and he's got like, so, oh, I've got a little bruise on my cheek. My hair's perfectly fine, though, even though the rest of my face is covered in burn marks. It's like, how have you managed to... Your hair is like... he's got... With the amount of like hairspray and product that he probably puts on, I would have thought that would have been a fire hazard.
Yeah, exactly right. No, I agree. I totally agree about ongoing damage thing. Like, just it seemed like, as you say, that was going to be a thing. There were certainly games that were playing with that, and it was such a cool immersive situation that we just went, ah, never mind, moving on. And it's like, what happened there?
Oh, I don't know. Video games, the industry is strange like that, isn't it? Every time that something amazing and really innovative that requires just a little bit of extra thought from the developer comes along, they're like, that's brilliant. It gets celebrated. Let's not copy that. It's like, okay then, bye. But there we go. That has been the UBP, the UBP, the UBP. Thank you so much, Si, for joining me here today. And I'm sure that you're going to come on next week's episode as well, because I'm going to try and wrangle both you and Josh in for a UB3. So that should be quite a fun one on that side. If you've got the social medias, now's the time to plug it, Si.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at Signiac_123.
Lovely, lovely. And you can follow me over on the Instagrams, Twitters, wherever else, at RetroJ, but the O is a zero. And be sure to check out my account, Si's account, and Josh's account next Thursday, when we put out the call for questions, where we'll be asking for all of your questions. Video game, TV, film, food-related, whatever. But until then, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you soon.
Bye! Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.